And like I said, we have the author of this book, Yannis Varoufakis, here to tell us a little bit more about it. And we have Teppo Eskelin to have a comment. And I have a very large three-dimensional question for you, and you may answer to it how you please. And I would like to you to tell all the audience here that what do you mean by this, the global Minotaur, what it means in a global context, what it means in a European context, and what it means if you have something to say in a Finnish context. Please, would you tell us?
What can I say? Not in response to your three-dimensional question, but in response to this astonishing collective effort to translate my book, which bestows upon me great honor and a great privilege and much joy. Thank you very much to all of you for doing this and for the comments that will be waged at me very shortly by my discussant. To each and every one of you for being here today. I'm chuffed and very privileged to be here. Okay. You all know the story of the Minotaur, I assume. It comes from pre-classical Crete. But let me answer directly your question. Why a global Minotaur? And what does a global Minotaur have to offer us in terms of understanding our present situation? Finland is experiencing a very strange recessionary period at the moment. Very strange in the sense that it was not predicted, and indeed it was utterly unnecessary given the productive capacities of this country. I shall try to end up with comments on the Finnish situation within a European context, within a global context. But first, let me tell you where the idea of the Minotaur came. It was in the early 2000s, around 2001 to be precise, when I was trying to make sense of something remarkable and very weird that was going on in the world economy. You see, in human history, great empires are built on surplus. Not on deficit, on surplus. And when they lose the surplus, they lose their power. The Roman Empire collapsed when it loses surpluses. The British Empire collapsed when it lost its surplus. Something weird happened around the late 60s, early 70s to our era's empire, the United States of America. It acquired greater power, greater hegemonic power, when it shifted from being a surplus country to being a deficit country. And that to me was a great source of puzzlement. How can that be? The Minotaur was a metaphor that I used. Being Greek, it came natural to me, and being Cretan as well. You know the philosophical conundrum. I am a Cretan, and all Cretans are liars. So, am I a Cretan? And if I'm not, am I a liar? You know. In order to be able to narrate what was this new world order, which was founded on deficits for the first time in human history, the story of the Minotaur relates in the following manner. In the myth, as you may recall, the Athenians are the weak power. The Cretans are the powerful hegemonic ones. And they've imposed upon the Athenians a terrible price for Pax Cretana, for the peace that prevailed in the Mediterranean at the time, and for the prosperity that came with that peace, the trade that was going on between Crete, the Phoenicians, the Egyptians, and so on and so forth. And what was that price? They had to contribute regularly to the Minotaur. The Minotaur was this ugly beast, the result of incest, a very dark secret in the guts of the palace of King Minos. And the Athenians would have to send young boys and girls to be devoured by this creature in order to keep this peace and prosperity and trade going. The reason why I use this myth was because something similar vaguely similar, was going on since the late 1970s in the global economy, which explains how the United States could enhance its hegemony, even though it became a deficit nation. What was it that was going on? Before 1971, and this was the global design that Washington implemented after the end of the Second World War, we had a system of fixed exchange rates designed by the Americans, the Bretton Woods system, which made trade possible and kept exchange rates constant, more or less constant. But in order to avoid the destruction of such a fixed exchange rates regime like the gold standard in the mid-war period, the Americans added a component to this fixed exchange rate regime that was missing. And that's what I call surplus recycling. They were taking around 70% of American profits, surpluses, and sending them to Europe and to Japan. First through the Marshall Plan, then in a variety of ways. This recycling was not philanthropic. It was completely self-interested. And they understood that if to maintain a surplus, you have to recycle part of it to the deficit regions so that the deficit regions would create the demand for your products so that you can carry on exporting to them and making more surpluses, profits. But by the late 1960s, America lost its surpluses. Now, what would Germany do? What does Finland do when you go into deficit? Like a good Protestant, what you do is you take your belt and you tighten it, right? So you cut, you go into austerity. That's not what the Americans did. The Americans did the opposite. When they started having a budget deficit in their federal government and a trade deficit as a nation, they accelerated those deficits. They spent more, they imported more, okay? And destroyed the Bretton Woods system, which was predicated upon their own surpluses. Paul Volcker once said in 1971, if we can't recycle our own surpluses because we don't have any, we are going to recycle other people's surpluses. And how did they do that? By increasing their deficit, they were sucking into the United States German exports, Japanese exports, Finnish exports, to some extent, and much later, of course, Chinese exports, net exports. And who was paying for these? Because somebody has to pay for your deficit. Well, the rest of the world. The German industrialists, accumulating surpluses from having net exports, sent their money to Wall Street. Not because they were philanthropic, but because they thought in Wall Street they would get a better return. Same with the Japanese. Same with the Chinese now. So that tsunami of capital came back to America. So America was sucking in the net exports of everybody else and the surplus capital of everybody else. And the cycle was closed. It was a very interesting form of global surplus recycling. Okay? That was the environment in which the European Union and the Eurozone was built. It was predicated upon this very weird and wonderful system of surplus recycling. Unfortunately, the assumption that we made when we created the Eurozone, that we could create the gold standard here, the simulacrum of the Minotaur. And by the way, the connection with the Minotaur is that the capital flight to Wall Street, these tributes that were coming from Germany, from Japan, and from China, to Wall Street resembled the mythical tributes that the Athenians were sending to the Minotaur to be devoured in the guts and in the labyrinth of King Minos' palace. The Eurozone, which is now in trouble, causing much hardship in every nook and every cranny of the European Union, in Finland and in Greece, in Germany, where the proportion of working poor people is skyrocketing, and in Portugal, in France, in Italy, in Spain. That monetary union that we created was predicated on the assumption that this American Minotaur, this global recycling mechanism, would go on and on forever. In 2008, alas, it crashed and burned. And America can no longer perform that function for the world economy. The reason why the Eurozone is disintegrating was because it was never designed to survive without that surplus recycling that the Americans were doing on our behalf and which they can no longer do. And the point I shall make from the European perspective is that until and unless we realize that this surplus recycling mechanism is something that we need to infuse into the Eurozone. The Eurozone is going to be experiencing the trials and tribulations of present. You may think that Greece is a very different country from Finland, and you would be right, it is. Believe me, I know, I'm Greek. Nevertheless, it's like saying that Australia, the Australian desert, is different to the Russian countryside. Yes, it is. But if you want to explain why in the last few years we have had floods in the Australian deserts and forest fires in Russia, you have to explain this systemically. It has to do with climate change. It's one crisis. It manifests itself differently in different parts, like in the Australian desert, floods. In the Russian steppes, you have forest fires. But if you want to understand it, you have to understand it systemically. And what this book tries to do is to offer this systemic explanation. If you want to find out why Finland today is experiencing a diminution of investment, why your current account is severely trying the external position of this nation, if you want to look at why employment opportunities are not what they used to be, you cannot understand it separately from the reasons why proud nations like Spain, Italy, Ireland, Greece are now insolvent, and why the Eurozone is imposing policies upon those countries, which is making it impossible for the surplus countries of the Eurozone to escape, to achieve escape velocity from the crisis that began in 2008 and which is today metamorphosizing itself constantly, shifting from one realm to the other, from the financial markets to the labor markets, from one country to the other, from the realm of very high interest rate yields for Italian debt to very low inflation, deflation in various places in Europe, unless you look at it from that global perspective. And the final point I shall make is that in writing this book, I try to avoid that which befell, the tragedy that befell humanity after the mid-war generations 2008, which happened in 1929. You will recall that in 1929, there was a financial sector collapse beginning in Wall Street. The first victim was the common currency of the era, which was a gold standard. Then proud European nations started turning against one another. Nazism started rearing its ugly head. And we started blaming one another without understanding that underneath all that, there was a systemic fragmentation and collapse of an economic financial system that could no longer survive. We are making the same mistakes after 2008, which is our generation's 1929. We had a Wall Street collapse again, like 1929. That Wall Street collapse occasioned the beginning of the fragmentation of the common currency, the euro, in Europe. And then very soon after that, we started pointing fingers at one another. Why? Because our political systems never geared up to using truth as a strategy. Our parliaments and our electorates were utterly misled by our politicians, who in a wonderful alliance with bankrupt bankers created circumstances that only exacerbated the crisis. Toxic bailout loans, supposedly to the poorer countries in the Eurozone that never ended up there but ended up in the banking sector. And one proud European nation was turned against another. The method in which I try to write this book is to take out of the equation completely the blame game of blaming one another. I believe that we have an obligation to ourselves and to the future of Europe to forget about the blame game, to look, to throw the cold light of rationality upon the problems that constitute the deeper causes of our malaise, and not never to forget that it is impossible to understand what's going on in Finland without understanding the European crisis, and it is impossible to understand the European crisis outside of its global context. That's the Global Minotaur. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Yanis. Now, Teppo, you may comment.
Okay, thank you.